Campus FM presents Treasures from Malta. This episode was originally recorded for the Treasures from Malta podcast series, produced by Fondazione Patrimonio Malti. Hello and welcome to Treasures from Malta, a podcast series produced by Fondazione Patrimonio Malti. I am Francesca Balzan, an art historian and an artist with a long connection with Patrimonio. I'll be presenting this podcast and meeting some of Malta's living treasures. These treasures are artists, historians or art collectors with some Malta connection. They're all fair game for the pod and we want to share them with you. Today we are talking with someone who has delighted our ears for decades with her wonderful voice. And we couldn't resist playing some of her most famous arias throughout the podcast. It is my great pleasure to introduce soprano Miriam Gauci.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation.
From your early training at La Scala, your career has soared and soared, winning several major competitions. You sang principal roles in all of the major opera houses worldwide, in practically every continent. Throughout your career, you sang opposite major international opera stars, such as Placido Domingo, and you've worked with numerous conductors, from Claudio Abbado to Riccardo Muti. You have been honored by both the Maltese and the Italian Republic. Miriam, what does it feel like to be such a trailblazer?
Well, it feels, I feel great. I feel happy about it, especially being Maltese. I have to say a big thank you to Malta, to my upbringing, to the, you know, it's amazing. But when you come from such a place, as a child, I was brought up in Birgoni, Vittoriosa. I come from a special music family. And, of course, my grandmother, my auntie, soprano Hilda Maria Tavone, she was my mentor. She was always, I was always around her as a child. You know, she used to sing and study opera. And I used to go always around her place, watching, listening. So it was like I had my sort of tirocinio, you know, like as a child.
As you learned in the house,
yes,
literally in the home.
Yes, yes. So I feel also this kind of sentiment for music, it comes from there somehow. You know, it's and the simplicity of life then it was fantastic. When I was a child, we had not so many cars around. We used to enjoy being outside for, you know, just enjoy the air, the surroundings.
So you had an advantage because you were literally born into it.
Yes.
The second advantage, of course, was that you were capable. You had the voice.
Yes.
And obviously, you were spotted because your aunt had all the knowledge and was passing on her training to you.
Well, back then, Auntie Hilda, she had a hard time, you know, to do her performances here, you know, because there was, I guess, this Compagnia Italiana from, you know, and they used to hire her, you know, the parts in Italian opera. It was not very easy for her, you know, being Maltese.
Was she in competition with other foreign singers that they were bringing in for the season?
No, she had a special talent and she never really felt in competition with anyone else. She never wanted actually to leave Malta. It was not easy for a woman then to leave the country and go and live abroad because of music. It was not something.
And yet you made this
but
great
I,
step.
She always told me, Miriam, you need to do it differently. You have to do it differently because you can't stay in Malta. You can't, you know, perform here, always the same houses and stuff. So, I mean, she used to talk to me like that, but I never imagined that I'm going to be
what would happen in future. At what age did you leave for Milan?
Well, I started singing, practicing with her at the age of 14. And then I left Malta, I was about 19, 20, when I left to study. I had a special opportunity then, because I won a scholarship from the Istituto Culturale Italiano. And they gave me the scholarship to go and study at the Conservatorio Giuseppe Verdi of Milano. When you're a student there back then, it was like you hear many people, many singers from everywhere in the world, from America, from Japan, from China. You learn also from other students. It was a great experience for me.
What did it feel like to adapt to being in such a competitive and international environment?
You know, you start doing things without knowing, because the love for music and the sort of like, you know, this feeling that you want to learn, you want to do it right, you want to... I believed in my talent somehow, because I had this backup from my grandmother and my auntie, you know, they sort of gave me this kind of security. And also because I had a very good start. This I have to say, because when you start learning, singing, and you do it in the right way,
in a structured way,
it's a fantastic thing, because at times it happened with many singers, even here in Malta, that they had to start from the very beginning and they had to get away the bad habits in singing. That's not easy. But with me, it worked differently. So I had to continue my footsteps in the right way, you know. And I remember the hard thing was for me to be in Milano for the first time. I had never taken a plane to anywhere else in the world. So I remember I just couldn't talk to my parents every day. I had to speak to them maybe once every week.
Were you homesick?
Actually, I was never homesick.
Because you were in love with music and music was with
this
you.
This is the thing. I was never really homesick. I was so much into music and so much in... I used to study at the conservatorio, go to private lessons with... I had a wonderful professoressa anche, Lia Guarini then, those days. I used to go to all the performances possible in Milano.
It was a way of studying.
And the opera, I used to... learn so much from the live performances.
Just observing, there and
listening, you know, I grabbed everything I could. It's not out of greediness. No. It's because I wanted so much to...
A real thirst.
And
to
I
learn.
Loved it so much.
Which was the first main part you were given?
My first important main part was La Voix Humaine of Poulenc. You know, because after the conservatorio, I had one special competition of the Centro di Perfezionamento of La Scala, that is the Accademia of La Scala. And during that time, I had an opportunity to make a competition in Bologna. And they offered me. I won the competition, and they gave me as a sort of acknowledgement to do La Voix Humaine di Poulenc, La Voce Umana of Poulenc. That was an opera for a soprano alone, and quite difficult.
How did it feel? Was it daunting?
It was amazing, because I had a very good start. You know, I had to rehearse for like 3 months, with producers, very good. It was like a special situation for me.
And yet you were still a student at the time. You were still studying at La Scala.
This is why, because I was already in my second year. Actually, I didn't feel comfortable in accepting this for the beginning because it was a different style of op. It was not like a bit modern then for me. That opera was a bit modern. It's not really modern, but
you must have learned on the job, so to speak.
And
no?
I had to start. And then I remember there was the maestro, Vladimir Delman, who was the one who selected me. And he told me, Miriam Gavci, if you sing this and if you do this opera and if you perform this opera, all the other operas for you will be very easy. You'll get. And I think he was right.
What a start. What a
difficult start. It was a very, very difficult start. But actually, I had time to go for it because we... And I had not sort of like the pressure because it was in an ambiente for young singers, not like, you know. But it was at the Comunale di Bologna. Actually, that was my very first opera, of course, in Italia. Then I had invitations to sing subito in Israel.
As a result of La Traviata, of this performance.
Yes, yes. And so I started, and with this Scala, I had these big opportunities to sing Orfeo di Luigi Rossi. The concorso that for me, the Accademia della Scala, for me, was a big, big, big asset. It was a great present.
We talked about it being daunting and a very difficult role to start out with, but if you look back on your career, what was the most terrifying moment in terms of performance?
Well, terrifying, really. I don't feel anything in particular on those grounds because I always waited and I always selected my roles. For example, I didn't accept to sing Madame Butterfly for many years, for example. Before Madame Butterfly, I did a lot of other operas.
Why was that? Were you waiting for your voice to...
Because I didn't want to mix a lot of roles together. I wanted to keep lirico, like sing Rigoletto. I started with Rigoletto and then I did La Traviata. Those were the roles. Then I went to La Bohème. And then comes later, you know, time, Madame Butterfly. Because Madame Butterfly is a very taxing opera. It's not that it's difficulty in music, but first of all, Madame Butterfly is heavily orchestrated. It's more than Tosca, for example. The orchestration of Butterfly is heavier than Tosca. And the situation with Butterfly is that you have this lyric bellissimo voice in expression, and but with big, big sentimento because you are personating a 16-year-old girl who gets this experience in being in love, and then she had a child, and then her husband so abandoned her with, you know, and then she kills herself. So it was a very dramatic, and those are things that you have to be calm, you know, have to be secure vocally, and also when you act, you have to be very, very agile and very, you know, like an athlete, you know. That's when I started with that role, I think it gave me. That was my, for example, debut in America with Butterfly.
But you had the confidence to do it at that stage because it takes on a lot of difficulties in the sense that apart from the singing, as you say, the acting has to really convey
the sentiment. I sort of never had like this fear because whatever I prepared, I had offers, I always accepted things that were suitable for me then, and I was always very careful not to ruin my voice, not to overdo it. You know, I just always wanted to take my steps. And this is why I think my voice lasted so much and so for so long.
In fact, as one ages, the voice matures and changes. Do you adapt your style to take on these changes that are happening in the voice?
It's not that it changes, really. It becomes probably more dramatic. You start as a lirico leggero a bit, then it comes to a lyric voice, then it comes to a bit a lirico spinto. But it's not that it changes, really. You know, it becomes more sort of like it grows a bit bigger in the sound.
Is there a point when you have to stop singing, though? When the voice is then, perhaps the power of the voice starts to reduce?
What I find, I find it really dangerous when young singers, they tend to sing everything together. You can't really joke around with your voice, because once you lose it, you cannot get it back. And if the voice starts sort of tight, the worst thing in the voice is to start to have a wobble. That means that the voice is già in partenza. So you need to keep the voice always. And once you gain this technique and you keep it and you can conserve your voice for many, many years.
Do you still feel nervous on stage? Is that something that ever goes, or?
Mamma mia, this is something. I loved everything about stage, about singing, about being with other colleagues and rehearse and stuff. And everything I loved about, and the costumes and the makeup and the hair and everything. But that was always for me a big issue.
The nerves before you step onto the stage.
I remember once I asked Placido Domingo, how can I control my anxiety, my sleepless nights, my worries? How can I get rid of this? And he told me, yes, there's only one thing that you can do. Miriam, he said, you go and work in a bank. And you don't have to worry about anything else.
And life will be calm.
Yes. And he told me, this is something that you have to deal with.
Yes, it's inevitable.
Yes, and it's not true that you get used to it. Of course, you get confident on stage. Once you dominate this sort of thing.
Does it disappear once you start to sing?
Once you start singing, normally, as an opera artist, I have to say, an opera singer, I used to go always 2 hours before that's the normal thing, you know, just go before, 2 hours before to get ready with the makeup and sort of you keep yourself calm, they put on your makeup, the mask, everything, the costumes, and then you do your vocalizzi, and you start building up, you know, a bit, calming a bit, you feel like you're preparing yourself for this event. But you start getting a bit better just a few moments before you start singing. It's not that, you know, the nerves are, but then they help you to interpret the character, you know.
They sharpen your performance.
Because you'd say, my goodness, what's going to happen tonight? I hope everything will be okay. Anything can happen on stage. I remember once during Madame Butterfly, it was just after the problem with the Twin Towers. So everyone, all of a sudden, you know, the whole world got scared with this situation. And I remember it was just a few months after I was singing Madame Butterfly at the Berlin Staatsoper. And at the very end, when you have this dramatic music coming and you're singing with a child and you're about to kill yourself, a big bulb from somewhere on stage exploded. And that moment, it sounded like una bomba, like boom. And I remember the conductor, he just went like that, because he was shocked, he was terrified,
yeah.
And I grabbed the child because I thought something is falling around, or I don't know, for a moment, I thought, Mamma mia, is this something?
It's happening again, 9/11 is happening again.
You know, and I remember I just took the child like that, and then I continued, because I said, the show must go on, whatever, you know. Quite an experience that was.
I can imagine, and obviously all the eyes are on you, and in a way, if you panicked, the whole opera house would have panicked, probably. Yes. All the audience would have run out.
When I perform, first of all, I have in mind, it's like the music, the lyrics, you know, the expression, sentimento, it's everything goes together, you know, and they become part of you, really, that moment. I used to feel that every time, even if today I sing an aria, if I'm not in this particular, if I don't go, even when I study, if I don't enter sort of in a mood like that, it wouldn't work beautifully.
With the visual artists, we tend to call it being in the zone. You are in a different state of consciousness where you are completely communing with your art.
Yes.
And nothing else matters.
Really, that's how it works. And the audience sort of like, you have a mirror in front of you, because you feel it and you know that you are doing this for them in a way, you know, just. And knowing that you are singing, you are doing the performance, and you know you've got beautiful anyone in front of you. And at times I used to think, imagine maybe somebody is in the opera for the first time. You feel that you want to give them all your heart, you know. That's a beautiful feeling. And thank God, I always felt happy with that.
It is a great sense of generosity from your part,
yeah,
as well.
Before, 2 days before the performances, you know, you feel miserable. You're afraid that you get sick. You don't feel up to it. Not up. It's like you get all the sort of bad ideas. They come to you. They hit you. You know?
All the dreads, all the things that make you dread.
If you feel your nose is a bit dry, if you look at the mirror and your throat is slightly pink, you become
paranoid, because you are reliant entirely, and nothing can sort that out.
So you don't sleep well, because you get your adrenaline. Actually, I lived my whole life in this situation, which I feel grateful. I have to say thank you to the Lord, because it's a beauty. I mean, it's not easy, but fantastic. Today, what I really miss is that we have beautiful artists around, but we don't get to see the real ones performing.
In what sense?
Perché today is not who you are, who you know. Today it's a bit like a mercato. That's how the agencies, the dirigenti del teatro,
so the commercial concerns, you know, overtake the actual artistry.
At times I see, if you don't really know, if you don't get to know the real, you know, these particular people,
you won't get through it.
I mean, when I started, when I, looking back, I said, Mamma mia, I was una mosquito from Malta. Really, because I didn't know anything about this business. I only had as a child and as a young
thank
age,
God, in a way, you didn't
I
know.
I had my auntie, she was an opera singer. She taught me how to sing. She gave me all the knowledge that she had. But for me, it was very simple. You sing because you have the voice, this talent, you know, this benefit from God, something that you have. And I used to believe, because my grandmother, she used to tell me, Miriam, tu hai talento, veramente. She used to tell me, she used to give, you know.
She gave you confidence.
She used to give me confidence, super confidence. She used to give me.
I think you repaid her confidence in buckets.
Yes, but, you know, she gave me this sort of like injection to go through it.
Did that carry you through?
It did, a lot.
That's wonderful. It what a memory to keep.
Yes, yes.
Close your
the
heart.
Thing is that when I started, and you know, by age I am very sensitive. I can cry in a minute. No, when I remember, I don't like to think about it because she passed away. Just after my first year in Milano.
Oh, she didn't get to see
the heights of your career. And she didn't get to see anything about it. I mean, I was just climbing up the ladder.
We've just played the aria from Tosca, Vissi d'arte, Vissi d'amore. Why is it that you chose this particular aria for us to play?
Vissi d'arte and Vissi d'amore is really what I've been through. I lived for the theater, I lived for opera, I lived for the music, I lived like that, you know, because Floria Tosca was an opera singer, she was an artist. And of course, I'm very romantic also, even though I'm old now, I'm still very, my thinking.
You're not old at all.
You know, so I find music and amore and love, they combine together in a fantastic way.
And you can hear it in your voice, actually.
You know, amore doesn't really mean like being in love always, but it's like it changes into different aspects, you know. The love is not always the same, but it grows a lot. And it becomes part of your heart, of your life. You know, you feel devoted to somebody. You feel close. You feel like that you need to share everything. You know, this is a matter of sharing, of to have this amicizia, you know, friendship. And this is how I lived my life, actually. I find myself lucky to be in a situation always like this. Of course, I had my ups and downs. I had my troubles always. Life was never very easy, but I think it's part of my knowledge as a child, part of my sort of growing, you know, growing up in a tradition like that, you know, like having everyone pampering you, loving you. This, my parents were fantastic. Mamma mia. I always remember how life was as a child. It gave me so much.
And so much confidence as well.
Yes, yes. I still have my father living with me. And he's one of my biggest fans. And you know how he starts the day?
Mm-hmm.
By playing an aria from Il Bacio, Di Arditi. It's not, you know.
Do you ever get special requests from him to sing?
No. He knows that I am difficult in those terms. You know, when it comes to singing, I do it when I want and when I feel like. And
not on demand.
Not on demand. No. Not on demand.
This episode, originally recorded for the Treasures from Malta podcast series and now being broadcast on Campus FM, is a conversation between me, Francesca Balzan, and my guest, celebrated soprano Miriam Gauci. Which role was the most technically challenging for you? And I'll tell you why I'm asking you this. While I was doing research for this podcast, I spoke to a great friend of yours who will remain unnamed, but I always speak to friends of the people I'm going to interview because the best stories come from there.
Yes.
And she told me that you used to recount that you were once made to perform Butterfly in a very restricted Japanese style.
Yes, that was
the Bastille.
It was at the Opera de Bastille in Paris, yes. That was very difficult. That was with Bob Wilson, the producer, who made this. Oh, yes, that was incredible.
What is the Japanese style? Let's start with that.
Yes, you know, normally, this was an unconventional setting. For example, I had Bob Wilson is a very famous producer, an American producer, extremely talented, fantastic. And he has his special ideas. For example, if you see his theater, his operas, you can tell this is Bob Wilson. It's like when you see the paintings, you say,
this is Hallmark,
this is Monet, somehow. This is, you know, you can tell even. And that was something incredible, this Butterfly. And the idea was to have the Madame Butterfly, of course the music exactly as Puccini wrote it, but on an empty stage, only with lights and colors. And I had not the kimono, normal kimono. I had like a special silk, not that it, you know, the one that flows beautifully.
So it was very stiff.
Keep a little bit stiff. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I was not allowed to sit with this costume before going on stage because they had to press it every time. And I had like not a kimono. I had like a
strapless,
strapless costume with a big long sleeves. Mm-hmm. And it like I had to act like a kabuki style, not like we do it ourselves. And I mean, it was something totally different from totally. And I knew about it, but I never imagined how difficult it was going to be because actually I had to work for a couple of months with a choreographer.
I see, because you were actually dancing. And
because the steps were different. Yeah. You know, I had to walk in a different way. I had to move in a different way. You know, I wish that I can show it, but you can't, but it's totally different. Yeah. But the result was fabulous. Mm. And so I enjoyed it.
Exactly. Did
it I enjoyed it so much because it was something different and so challenging. And I felt very comfortable with it. And I have to say that I've learned a lot from that production.
Why is that?
Because you learn like different moves. You think differently. It's like the moves that you do are more concentrated, you know, because at times we used to see a lot of exaggerating, you know, stuff on stage, which I never liked. I always wanted to be very personal in this. And fortunately, I worked with fantastic producers ever. With this one, with this particular one in of Bob Wilson, this butterfly worked wonders. It was great, very, very, very successful. You know, I had fantastic reviews and the public went crazy and yes.
It really worked out.
It worked out. But I remember I had to stay for the prelude on stage for about like 10 minutes. With my hands hanging up in the air.
Very physically demanding.
Sitting straight. But you would not, you know, once you're there, you hear, you listen to the music, you know what's happening, what's going to happen, and, you know, you live the part. You live the part. And you practice, yes.
Talking about practicing, many times singers come from different parts of the world. Uh-huh. And at what stage do you meet up together to be able to practice together? Is there time to do that?
No, of course. Of course, for example, when you are offered to do a production, an opera, they select the singers, and then we practice for a couple of months together. And you have to practice with the conductors differently, you know. Everybody's got, the conductor has other ideas musically, the producer's got another idea. It's.
Do you have a bit of a say in the direction?
Of course you have, of course. Even your personality, you know. And the thing is that once you start rehearsing, the producers tend to catch up with your character, with yours. So they never go against you. I never had any egg argument on these lines. Maybe I got an argument regarding my hair. I have to say the hairstyles, for example. When I did, for example, with Franco Zeffirelli. I loved Franco Zeffirelli. I did La Bohème. I did this production at the Metropolitan at La Scala and in Napoli, San Carlo di Napoli. And we were in Milan, Vienna anche, but in Napoli, we were together for a couple of months for rehearsals. And I remember, you know Franco Zeffirelli, the one who made this film of course, Romeo and Juliet? Actually, he painted Romeo and Juliet for me and he gave me that as a present. Yes. And he used to tell me, Miriam, you know how I want the hair for Mimi? The La Riga Queen met in... He liked that kind of hairstyle. I think he had it. Of course, it was also in fashion then. But I always wanted to cheat a little bit with this because I didn't feel comfortable with that kind of... And he always wanted to make it very flat, you know, very, very flat.
Who won in the end?
Yes. I remember as a child, I used to wear this...
Little parting, yeah.
And I still have it till today, because if I do this, I always used to get that, you know, as a child. But then I said, no, we have to make it a bit different, because... And I remember I used to argue a bit on these lines regarding the hairstyles and maybe the costume wanted a bit so and a bit so, you know. But... the most beautiful thing with Zeffirelli was that he used to do the rehearsals like together with you on stage. He used to come close and show you and tell you how to do it. But like he used to see it as a film. Opera for him was like a film. And you would say to yourself, I mean, for example, at the Metropolitan in New York, Is it going to, this expressions, these gestures are going, you know, small, intimate things. Are they going to sort of
translate,
well, go to the audience sort of in such a... And really, really, he was right.
He knew what he was doing.
He was right.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. It, big comparison with Bob and
of
him.
Course, of
you
course.
Know, he was really traditional, very, very special with costumes, with the Otello, his Otello. Amazing, amazing.
I saw his Traviata in New York in 2006, I think it was.
Was it the one in black and white, perhaps?
No,
was it? No.
It was wonderful. It was Zeffirelli.
Zeffirelli, amazing, yes.
It was really a wonderful experience, really moving.
Actually, as an opera, you asked me before, that I think that was the most difficult part for me.
Was it? Which one was it?
The La Traviata.
The Traviata.
I performed La Traviata for many years. And then I had to... Actually, I started out with... Traviata for me was like a big show, you know. I loved the piece. I did my first audition with La Traviata in Genève. By the time I arrived in Milano, because I used to live in Milano then... But on my return, I already had my contract sent by fax.
Oh, my goodness.
To my management.
How wonderful.
Yes. It was a beautiful for me, but Traviata was difficult because I had already a lyrical voice, and it goes very high, and it goes very fast. And there is this estrano aria, which is something that you want to do it. Right. And once you get this over with, then you feel okay.
It's a relief.
It's a relief. Then the next things, I mean, the only good thing about La Traviata is that you have it in the beginning, this.
So you can get it over and done with. Yes. And you're okay then.
Yes.
Worked with famous conductors, and indeed you are married to one.
You're
married to Maestro Michael Laus,
who is
the celebrated Maltese conductor. Does that give you a particular understanding of the work of the conductor, and what sort of dynamic is there between the conductor and the soprano?
It does. I think that helped me a lot in my life, in my career. He was part of this immensely. I always say it, because probably without him, I wouldn't have been as special, as good, I'm sure. Because musically, he used to prepare me. But he used to prepare me, you know, like, not like a pianist, because he's always he's a wonderful pianist, also Michael, you know. We met at the Conservatorio. That's how we met, at the Conservatorio in Milano. He was doing, his, you know,
piano studies.
Two Maltese in Milano. He was doing the pianoforte and conducting and everything. And I was doing my singing. So that's how we got together. And he used to prepare me, actually, with a mindset of a conductor. And what the conductor is going to do here. Because with the piano, it's quite different, actually. But when you have already this kind of, you know, the phrasing, the expressions and stuff, he used to give me this kind of background already.
Which really prepared you then for your rehearsals?
Yes, always he did. And especially, I remember once, the first time I worked with Riccardo Muti in Vienna. I was so scared because everybody... told me before, be attenta con Riccardo Muti because he can be tough. He can be a devil. He said, oh my God, I really don't like to work in this situation. You know, because you want to work with everyone in good spirit. You know, in a, like, I never enjoyed working with colleagues that felt that they are a bit
arrogant.
I always wanted to be to have a fantastic background around me, because this is me. I am like that, you know. I don't like to have bad feelings around me. And I said, Oddio, speriamo bene. And I had my first rehearsal with him. That was Mefistofele di Boito. And I had to sing Elena and Margherita, the two roles together. Because in the past they used to make Elena un soprano drammatico, and Margherita was a lirico soprano. And he said, no, Boito wanted the same, and I want to do it this way. And insomma, it was. And I went for the first rehearsals with him. Very gentile, very nice, and very professional, and molto. He was giving us lectures about the scapigliatura of some of boy stuff like that. And after, he said, Signora Gauci, because in public, in rehearsal, he's very official. No, then when we go and eat together in restaurants, he's a nice person, really like everybody else. Like, but in the theater, he is molto special. Said, Signora Gauci, with whom did you prepare this opera? I'm curious. I said, Oddio, if I tell him now that I've prepared this opera with my husband, I don't know what he's going to say. But I couldn't lie. I have to say, I said, Maestro, I prepared this with my husband. Who is your husband? And then I told him exactly. Perché the thing is that Michael, he knew
what the conductor would expect.
Somehow he had already, you know, he was fond of Riccardo Muti. He used to follow his music in Milano, you know, and see him conducting. So imagine, even Michael
could prepare for your style.
He had like intuition of this kind of style, you know, that. And it worked beautifully. He gave me the best compliment ever.
A compliment to both of you, actually.
Yes. He complimented me and Michael, actually. Very.
In the past, the opera house in Malta was like a testing ground for new singers who had promise. They say that the Maltese audience was so knowledgeable about opera that they would be very vocal if they didn't think the singer was good. They would shout and whatever. And La Scala, which is also famous for being very vocal, if they disapprove, they disapprove.
I remember when I performed for the first time at La Scala, it was Orfeo di Luigi Rossi. And I sang the parte di Proserpina, very beautiful part, and with all the melodies and stuff. And I remember, before the premiere, before the prova generale, because at La Scala they always do the prova generale, that means the performance before the premiere with the public. And one of the boys, let's say, from up there, from the Loggione, they used to say Loggione della Scala, he came to me, he went to other colleagues of mine in Bocca al Lupo, blah blah blah, and so. And I thought, how sweet, you know, from the clock. They used to call them the clock. Gente from the clock. They sort of like enhance the applause and make it. But a bit scary too, because they can be
critical.
Ma anche vocal, I find. And I remember he came to me and he told me, nice to have you, Bocca al Lupo. This is going to be amazing. You're such a young. I was still very young then. And he was talking and talking and talking. And then I said, why isn't he leaving? I need to be alone, to concentrate. And then I said, per favore, io devo essere un po' tranquilla prima di cantare, mi dispiace. And I sort of nicely, I showed him the door. Then, after a while, the tenor came to me, knocking at the door. He said, Miriam, how much money did you give him? I said, what are you talking? Money? I said, money? What are you speaking about? This is not new town. Because singers used to sort of like tip them.
Not to be critical.
Otherwise, just to be...
To shut up, basically.
But I feel, first of all, like a woman, I feel, you know, if I want to tip a man, you know...
He's got to at least carry on.
No, in the terry, I feel, you know, it's not like when you're in a restaurant. Or if you have the, you know, the seamstress or your makeup artist.
Well, it's a different, you know, professional pride. Yeah. You have to tip somebody to shut up.
You do tip people, but you don't tip them to applaud you or not to, I mean... I remember when I was a student in Milan one time, Pavarotti was singing Tosca. And it was, you know, it was fantastic hearing Pavarotti singing Tosca at La Scala. And I was there at the Logione, up there, because I had no money, you know, to spare. I mean, I just couldn't spend all that money to be in the platea, so... And I used to go there regularly. I had, we used to queue, all the students used to queue, like, say, a couple of hours each, because we had always these standing seats for a very, very stupid cheap price. But we were there. And it was standing seats. For us, it was always a big joy to be there. And I remember there was somebody, after his first aria, this woman started screaming, so yes, very negatively. I don't want to say what she said, because she said something terribly, really bad about Pavarotti. And I answered back to her. I said, Specie, how dare you speak about an artist like Pavarotti? And you know what she told me? She told me, did he pay you for that?
She turned the tables on you.
Yes, yes.
Oh my goodness me.
No, at the Scala, and with, for example, I did also La Sonnambula there. I was doing with Gian Andrea Gavazzeni, one of them, was very famous conductor in the past, you know, time of Maria Callas, times. He was very old, this conductor, and I remember he used to shout and scream his heart out, saying, "Ismo, per favore! Guardate me, you have to look at me, not at the monitors." But, you know, with the modern opera, you had to act, you had to turn around. It was not like in Tempi di Maria Callas. And they used to sit there rigidly. Maria Callas, she started this beautiful acting, singing acting. She was excellent, they say. I mean, I never had the opportunity seeing Maria Callas, unfortunately, I was, but from recording. And you know, you would look around, you would sort of like see, sing, but you can get your sort of, your connection with the orchestra, looking at the monitors. He used to say, "Quelli monitors infernali." Thank you.
Miriam, finally, who do you look up to as the greatest soprano there ever was, at least within recording history?
Well, I think Maria Callas, definitely. Maria Callas, for me, actually.
For her voice, her stage presence, her acting is...
Maria Callas was special because she used to sing everything, all the soprano repertorio, from the leggero till the dramatic.
What versatility.
She had, and she was a great musician. I mean, it's not that she learned music because she had to sing. She was already a musician.
That helps.
Of course, it helps. Today, there is something that's very, it's really demanding. To be in opera, you need to be also a musician, you know. This is why, you know, at times I remember when I was a student, I used to say, but why do I need to learn harmony? Why do I have to learn the pianoforte? You know, it's una grande pizza, you know. After you start realizing how important these things are for your building, you know, the music, the, you know, music wise, very important. And you can tell when somebody sings, sense of knowledge, sense of, you can tell, singing out of, you know, just making the music, but not as a musician. And I always insist, and I always insisted with young singers, especially Maltese, because I find that we have quite a few singers here that with fantastic voices, believe me. But the thing is that they want to sing.
And so they bypass the
and
whole
I say
process.
I always used to say, please, music is very important. You need to learn the music, not to copy the sound. Just that comes within you, that you know what you're dealing with. The notes are there, not only, you know, but you have to understand the phrasing, how it goes. It's important. I find, of course, I understand. It's very demanding.
Well, Miriam, I would like to conclude by thanking you for sharing your life, your experience. Your great generosity of spirit, which just shines through. I can see the love for your art really coming across, and I am sure that this has really bewitched your audiences, as it has bewitched me today.
Thank you so much.
So thank you very much for your time and for sharing with us.
Thank you so much.
The music you have heard throughout the podcast is from the album Soprano Arias from Italian Operas, performed by Miriam Gauci. Alexander Rabari conducts the Belgian Radio and TV Philharmonic Orchestra. Thank you for listening to this episode of Treasures from Malta on Campus FM. This was originally recorded as a podcast, and there are pictures and links to all we've discussed on the Fondazione Patrimonio Malti website under the podcast section. That's www.patrimonio.org.